Have you ever sat down with a blank navigation log, a sectional chart, and a plotter and thought, where do I even start? I'm Pattern on Traffic Pattern, and this is Radio Hangar. Today we are going to build a nav log together, line by line, because this skill is not just about passing the check ride, it is about understanding what your airplane is actually doing between point A and point B. I know you have ForeFlight, you have Garmin Pilot, you tap the departure, tap the destination, and the whole route fills itself in with winds, fuel burns, and timing down to the second. And look, I use those tools too. They are incredible. But here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The day you can build a nav log by hand is the day you actually understand cross-country flying. Everything before that is just following a moving map. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There is a coin for that. Private Pilot. Instrument, commercial, they have got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. All right, let's walk through this together. I'm going to take you from a blank sheet of paper to a completed navigation log, and by the end, every number on that page is going to make sense. Step 1. You need a route. And this is where a lot of students make their first mistake. They draw a straight line from departure to destination and call it done, but a straight line is just your starting point. Before you commit to that course, you need to look at what is between those two airports. Pull out your sectional chart, or unfold it, because those things never fold back the way they came. Look along that straight line. Is there restricted airspace in the way of military operations area? Class Bravo or Charlie airspace you would rather not deal with? High terrain, a long stretch over water or featureless land with no emergency options? Your route needs to account for all of that. Sometimes the smart route adds 10 or 15 miles, but keeps you clear of airspace you do not want to bust into and gives you landing options the whole way. Pick waypoints that make sense, prominent intersections, towns, lakes, airports along the route. These are the checkpoints you will use to verify your position and timing in flight. Now, once you have your route drawn on the chart with your checkpoints marked, it is time to start filling in the nav log. And the first column is the one that trips people up the most, true course. This is the direction from one checkpoint to the next, measured against a line of longitude on the chart. You lay your plotter along your course line, align it with a meridian, and read the angle. Make sure you're reading it in the direction you are flying. I have seen students read 180 degrees off because they grab the wrong end of the scale. That is a bad day. Write down the true course for each leg. If you have 5 checkpoints, you have 4 legs, and each one might have a slightly different course. Do not round aggressively here. If it is 073 degrees, write 073. Precision now saves you headaches later. Next column, magnetic variation. This is the difference between true north and magnetic north where you are flying on the sectional chart. You will see dash magenta lines called isogonic lines. They are labeled with the variation. In the eastern United States, variation is west, which means you add it. In the western states, variation is east, so you subtract. The old memory aid is east is least, west is best, subtract for east, add for west. Apply the variation to your true course, and now you have your magnetic course. This is the direction your compass would point if there were no wind and no compass errors. We are getting closer to something useful, but we are not there yet. Here is where the wind enters the picture. And this is the part of the nav log that separates someone who can plan a flight from someone who truly understands what is happening to their airplane in the air. You need the winds and temperatures aloft forecast. I did a whole segment on reading that 6-digit code, so I will not repeat all of that today. But you need to know the wind direction and speed at your planned cruising altitude. If you're flying at 5,500 feet, you're looking at the 6,000-foot winds because that is the nearest reported level. Now you need to figure out two things. Your wind correction angle, which tells you how many degrees to crab into the wind to maintain your desired course. And your ground speed, which tells you how fast you're actually covering distance over the Earth. This is where the E6B comes in. Whether you're using the old manual circular slide rule or the electronic version, the process is the same. You set the wind direction and speed, you set your true course and true airspeed, and the computer gives you the wind correction angle and ground speed. The wind correction angle gets added to or subtracted from your magnetic course depending on whether the wind is coming from the left or the right. Wind from the left you add, wind from the right you subtract. That gives you your magnetic heading, the direction you actually point the nose of the airplane. And one more correction. Compass deviation. Every magnetic compass has small errors caused by the metal and electronics in the airplane. There is a compass correction card mounted near the compass in every airplane. It tells you how many degrees off the compass reads at various headings. Apply that correction, and you finally have your compass heading. The number you will actually see on the compass when you're flying the right direction. True course. Magnetic variation? Magnetic course. Wind correction. Magnetic heading. Compass deviation. Compass heading. That is the chain. Every step matters, and skipping one throws off everything downstream. Now, let's talk about the right side of the nav log, time and fuel. For each leg, you need the distance. Measure it on the chart with your plotter, write it down in nautical miles. Then divide that distance by your ground speed, and you get the estimated time en route for that leg. Not your airspeed, your ground speed. This is the number the wind correction gave you. A 20-knot headwind can turn a 30-minute leg into a 40-minute leg, and if you planned your fuel on airspeed instead of ground speed, you're going to come up short for fuel burn. Take the time for each leg and multiply it by your fuel consumption rate. If your airplane burns 8 gallons per hour and the leg takes 30 minutes, that is 4 gallons, simple math, but you have to do it for every leg, then add them all up. Here is where students get sloppy. They calculate fuel for the en route portion and forget the rest. You need fuel for taxi and run-up. You need fuel for the climb to altitude, and your fuel burn in the climb is higher than cruise. You need fuel for your descent and approach at the other end. And you need your reserve. The Federal Aviation Administration requires a minimum of 30 minutes of fuel reserve for daytime VFR flight. That is the legal minimum. I would call 45 minutes a smarter number, and an hour is what I actually plan for when I have the tank space. Add it all up. Taxi fuel, plus climb fuel, plus cruise fuel, for every leg plus descent fuel, plus reserve. Compare that total to your usable fuel capacity. If the number does not work, you either need a fuel stop, or you need to rethink the trip. Now there's one more row on the nav log that students sometimes leave blank, and it is one of the most useful ones. The estimated time of arrival at each checkpoint. You calculate your departure time, add the time for the first leg, and that gives you the time you should be crossing your first checkpoint. Then add the next leg time, and that is your second checkpoint arrival, all the way to the destination. Why does this matter so much? Because in flight, those ETAs are your early warning system. If you plan to cross that lake at 42 minutes past the hour and you're crossing it at 48, something has changed. Maybe the winds are stronger than forecast. Maybe you're off course. Either way, you know about it early enough to adjust. Without those ETAs, you're just flying along hoping things work out. And hoping is not a flight planning strategy. Let me give you a scenario. You're planning a flight from a little field in central Pennsylvania to an airport on the Maryland coast. It is about 130 nautical miles. You draw your route and pick three checkpoints along the way. A reservoir, a town with a railroad intersection, and a VOR that is close to your course line. You measure the legs. 32 miles, 41 miles, 28 miles, and 29 miles to the destination. You get the winds aloft and find you have got a wind out of the northwest at 18 knots at your altitude. Your true airspeed in the Cessna 172 is 105 knots. You run the E6B and find your ground speed works out to about 97 knots on average across those legs. With a wind correction angle of about 8 degrees, you do the math. Total en route time is roughly 1 hour and 20 minutes. Fuel burn at 8.5 gallons per hour gives you about 11.3 gallons en route. Climb burn adds another gallon. Taxi and run up. Call it a gallon. Reserve at 45 minutes is another 6.4 gallons. You're looking at roughly 20 gallons total. The airplane holds 56 gallons usable. You're fine with plenty of margin. But here's the thing. What if those winds shift? What if they end up being 28 knots instead of 18? Your ground speed drops. Your en route time grows. Your fuel burn goes up. This is why you calculate ETAs for each checkpoint. When you cross that reservoir 6 minutes late, you know the winds are not what was forecast. You recalculate mentally, and you know exactly where you stand on fuel. The examiner is looking for exactly this kind of awareness on the check ride. The Airman Certification Standards for private pilots say you need to plan a cross-country flight using appropriate charts, publications, and navigation systems. They want you to identify and select appropriate checkpoints. They want you to calculate headings, ground speeds, and fuel requirements, and they want to see you do it accurately enough to arrive within a few minutes of your planned time. But more than the numbers, the examiner wants to see that you understand the process. They might ask you what happens if the winds change. They might close your destination and see if you can divert using the same skills. If all you have ever done is tap a screen, that conversation is going to be very short and very uncomfortable. Here's my practical advice. Before your next cross country, whether it is for training or just for fun, build a nav log by hand. Start to finish chart, plotter, E6B pencil, then compare your numbers to what ForeFlight gives you. They should be close. If they are way off, figure out where you went wrong. Was it the variation? The wind correction? The ground speed calculation? Finding the error teaches you more than getting it right the first time. And then fly the trip with both. Your paper nav log on your kneeboard and the app on the iPad. Cross-check them. Watch those checkpoint ETAs and see how close reality matches your plan. That feedback loop is where real pilot knowledge lives. One more thing. Keep your nav log organized and legible. On a check ride, the examiner is going to look at it. A messy, crossed-out, hard-to-read nav log tells them you were rushing or confused. A clean one with clear numbers tells them you took the planning seriously. And it tells you that you can trust the numbers you wrote down when you're bouncing around at 4,500 feet trying to find that reservoir. The nav log is not busy work. It is not an antique skill from before GPS existed. It is the proof that you understand what your airplane is doing, where it is going, how fast it will get there, and how much fuel it will burn along the way. Every number on that page connects to a real force acting on your airplane. True course is geometry. Variation is the Earth's magnetic field. Wind correction is the atmosphere pushing you sideways. Ground speed is physics. Fuel burn is chemistry. When you build the nav log, you're building a model of reality. And when reality changes, you know how to update the model. That is what cross-country planning actually is, not pressing a button, building an understanding. Most of today's walkthrough came from the FAA's Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge, chapters on navigation and flight planning, along with the Private Pilot Airman Certification Standards. If you want to dig deeper, check them out at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Go build that nav log, and I will see you next time.